Suranandana Braja Janarandana Yasuranandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Thera Vanachari Yamuna Thera Vanachari Ujjaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janna Pallava Giri Vanadari Suranandana Praja Janarandana Yamuna Thera Vanachari
Yamuna Thera
Vanachari Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Shivasri Gaur Bhaktivinoda Kira Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinatha Shama Kundarada Kundigiri Govardhan Kira Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Kira Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur Kira Gaur Abhinandi All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Assembled Devotees All glories to the Lord of Sri Guru Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. Excuse me. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 13th chapter, text number 15. I'm breaking a little bit with tradition because of the topic volume. Just going to chant the Sanskrit and go right to the translation. Abhidrad Aryama Dangam Yatavad Agra Karishu Yavad Dadara Sudratvam Sapad Varsha Satam Rama. As long as Vidura played the part of a sudra, being cursed by Manduka Muni, Aryama officiated at the post of Yamaraj to punish those who committed sinful acts. Poor Srila Prabhupada. Vidura, born in the womb of a sudra woman, was forbidden even to be a part of royal heritage along with his brothers Dhritarashtra and Pandu. Then how could he occupy the post of a preacher to instruct such learned kings and kshatriyas as Dhritarashtra and Maharaj Yudhishthira? The first answer is that even though it is accepted that he was a sudra by birth, because he renounced the world for spiritual enlightenment by the authority of Rishi Maitreya, and was thoroughly educated by him in transcendental knowledge, he was quite competent to occupy the post of an acharya, or spiritual preceptor. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, anyone who was conversant in the transcendental knowledge or the science of Godhead, be he a brahmana or a sudra, a householder or a sannyasi, is eligible to become a spiritual master. Even in the ordinary moral codes maintained by Chanakya Pandit, the great politician and moralist, there is no harm in taking lessons from a person who may be by birth less than a sudra. This is one part of the answer. The other part is that Vidura was not actually a sudra. He was to play a part of a so-called sudra for 100 years, being cursed by Manduka Muni. He was the incarnation of Yamaraj, one of the 12 Mahajans, on the level with such exalted personalities as Brahma, Narada, Shiva, Kapila, Bhishma, Pallad, etc. Being a Mahajan, it is the duty of Yamaraj to preach the cult of devotion to the people of the world, as Narada, Brahma, and the other Mahajans do. But Yamaraj is always busy in his Plutonic kingdom punishing the doers of sinful acts. Yamaraj is deputed by the Lord to a particular planet, some hundreds of thousands of miles away from the planet of Earth, to take away the corrupt souls after death and convict them in accordance with their respective sinful activities. Thus, Yamaraj has very little time to take leave from his responsible office of punishing the wrongdoers. There are more wrongdoers than righteous men. Therefore, Yamaraj has to do more work than the other demigods, who are also authorized agents of the Supreme Lord. But he wanted to preach the glories of the Lord, and therefore, by the will of the Lord, he was cursed by Manduka Muni to come into the world in the incarnation of Vidura and work very hard as a great devotee. Working hard either way, this is notable. Such a devotee is neither a sudra nor a brahmana. He is transcendental to such divisions of mundane society, just as the personality of Godhead assumes his incarnation as a hog, but he is neither a hog nor a brahma. He is above all mundane creatures. The Lord and his different authorized devotees sometimes have to play the role of many lower creatures to claim the conditioned souls. But both the Lord and his pure devotees are always in the transcendental position. When Yamaraj thus incarnated himself as Vidura, his post was officiated by Aryama, one of the many sons of Kasyapa and Aditi. The Adityas are sons of Aditi, and there are 12. Aryama is one of the 12 Adityas, and therefore it is quite possible for him to take charge of the office of Yamaraj during his 100 years absence in the form of Vidura. The conclusion is that Vidura was never a sudra, but the greatest, but was greater than the purest type of Brahmana. Om Jnana Timadandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmalidamya Tasma Sri Guru Guru Maha Yukam Karuti Vachalam Pangunim Jayati Guru Yakripa Tamaham Vande Sri Guru Nidimitari Vancha Kapitiru Vishcha Kripa Sundu Vahir Vichha Patitanam Pavane Vaishnavi Guru 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 Jayasi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Radha Sri Vasa Gaur Vaktananda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. I was listening to a class the other day, and Prabhupada said, when one is sitting and speaking on the asana, they must be very comfortable. Therefore, the seat must be a comfortable seat. There should be no distress or difficulty or awkwardness in sitting. So, a nice seat. So, where do we begin with this purport? Multi-layered, multifaceted, connecting on all different types of spiritual points that are all very instructive. Each one of the points presented in this book could be a class in and of itself. There's so much information here. And it's purports like this that give us the ability to understand how Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur noted that you could speak on a single verse of the Bhagavad Gita for 1 month. So, we don't have a month. The first point noted here, actually, as I was, I've got all my notes here, I'm very meticulous like this, but something came to mind as I was reading this when Prabhupada mentions in the purport how the Lord appears like a hog, but he's really not. And therefore, sometimes the Lord and the authorized devotees have to play a role, but they're not necessarily recognized. It reminded me, several years ago, right at this very spot, we were having our, what used to be known as the annual Gaur Purnima Talent Show. I was the MC and I was introducing different people. And now here so-and-so will do this and so-and-so will do this, and I'm given a note. Bhakti Bob will come up. All right. So Bhakti Bob came up and stood next to me and everybody laughed. Except me. And I stepped back and didn't get it. Bhakti Bob had some funky baseball hat on and hadn't shaved, had a little mustache and some growth. And I kind of recognized the court though, but turned out it was my wife. That was her talent show thing. She dressed up in my clothes and, you know, that was the joke and I missed it. But this is the point. There's pictures of that floating around. It's quite humorous. But that's the point, is that the Lord and the devotees sometimes appear in a form that they're not recognized. We don't know who it is, but they have a role to fulfill. So, in this purport, the very first point that I think is important, and Prabhupada goes right to, is that he addresses the so-called sudra position of vidura. Now, this position of vidura as a sudra stems from two long storylines. And the first, as indicated in the purport, has to do with Manduka Muni. Now, we've kind of touched on this story over the last few verses here, this chapter. So we know this name. We've had hints at to it, but I thought I'd go a little bit into it here. The story takes place in a previous yuga. And this is prior to even the appearance of the Pandavas, Krishna's appearance in the previous yuga. So we find that there is, at that time, very little strain from the dharmic principles of this world. And we find there's one solitude Muni. He's living in a quiet hermitage. He's executing his daily activities very nicely. He has a few, you know, devotees, fellow associates in his hermitage. Somehow these thieves end up there. Now, whether they planned out in ahead, okay, look, we've stolen this, we need a place to lay low, let's go hide out in the Muni's ashram, or whether they brought the goods with them and figured they'd stash them there and just hang around till it was, you know, more relaxed time, as they say in the vernacular, till the heat cooled off, and they could take their goods and go, whether they disguise themselves as fellow ashramites, you know, these are all points which will leave to the creative movie and plot makers and storytellers to fill in, but we just know that somehow these bad guys came into Manduka Muni's ashram and were staying there. The police came, the constables, the government, they captured them. When they captured them, oh, you're in this ashram, so you're all arrested. Oh, and you too, Manduka Muni. This is your ashram. They're in your place. You're going too. Wait a minute. Well, I didn't, you know. Sorry. It's the law of government. Everybody here is being arrested. So they're all hauled in, including our Muni. And it's an interesting thing. It's kind of like on the street level, the police have arrested these people, but they don't make the complete judgment of what's going on. Their job is to find the criminals and bring them in. That's one branch of the government. Another job of the government is to now take these people and legislate over what they did, to hear the case, to find the facts, pass the judgment, and then to have a third branch that's going to execute the sentence. This is the way it works. So it wasn't the police or the constable's duty to figure out, okay, oh, no, you weren't, well, okay, well, you can sit. No, you're all together, you all come in. I'll let the court sort it out, as they say nowadays. So this is what happened. They were brought before, they were all found guilty, and they were all sentenced to death. Not just sentenced to death. Let's be frank, it's rather grisly. Prabhupada mentions in a lecture on the fifth canto in Vrindavan in 1976 what's called the Shula. The Shula is a long iron rod lance. How shall I politely say this? It's placed up the rectum and pushed out through the head. This was the punishment. So I'm only imagining, I've never seen this, but I'm only imagining it must be tied down arms and legs. And then this iron rod is, this was the punishment. Prabhupada mentions it, a quite heinous punishment. He actually mentions this in some Arabian countries is going on, you know, like that. But at any rate, it's a pretty gruesome way to have to die. So as, and this is a classic, you know, storyline, as the hero of the story, Mantukamuni, is about to be the king. No, wait. This is a great Muni. You can't do this to him. Release him immediately. You know, we see that in many great storylines, you know, great literature and all. They have, you know, the hero is about to be put to death and the king walks in and does away with the punishment. So, the Muni's released. Oh, just in the time. Okay, great. But he's like, wait a minute. I'm a Muni. How did I get put into this position? Well, I know who knows the answer to this because he's educated. He knows Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the one that gives out all the punishment. I'm about to be punished, so he goes to Yamaraj. This is also indicative of his potency. He can go to Yamaraj. Now, if you or I are unhappy about something, we can barely make it to the judge that might have officiated over our case in court. This Muni goes straight to Yamaraj. All right. What have I ever done that warranted this? I have led a sinless life. I'm a Muni living in an ashram. Yamaraj says, oh, yes. As a young child, you took a thorn and inserted it into the rectum of an ant in a torturous way. Therefore, you're punished. Now, this is something that common, foolish young boys do. You know, the classic example is the magnifying glass with the sun going through it and burning the ants. You know, we see that nowadays. But, you know, this type of, it's not intended. And if they understood the parameters of what's being done, probably stop it. But this was something that was executed by him as a child. And so when the Muni heard this, he just went off on Yamaraj. In my childhood, without any knowledge, I did this, and for that you're giving me such a painful punishment as an adult? You don't have any common sense. What's it they say nowadays? Common sense isn't so common. You have no common sense. You're not fit to be a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, because a Brahmin or a Kshatriya must understand the subtle implications of laws, of rulings, of matters of discipline. You don't understand these things, therefore you are a Sudra. And I curse you for 100 years to become a Sudra. Now, this is how Yamaraj ended up in his position as Vidura. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport, Yamaraj was delighted. Some time off, vacation. Everybody wants a vacation, right? or as they call it, vastation, because I don't want to go back. So Yamaraj is a Mahajan. His pleasure as a Mahajan, as a great devotee, is through sharing Krishna consciousness. This is all of our pleasures. Now, interesting thing about this Mandukamuni story. I have my own Mandukamuni story. Some 6 or 7 months before I moved into the temple in 1973, I had hitchhiked out to North New Hondo, which is north of Taos, New Mexico, in the mountains to live on an Indian reservation to help build a permanent house with some Indian guy anyway. So I hitchhiked out there, but It was the middle of winter, and I was living in a teepee, and there was no heat. And I had become a vegetarian by this time, but let's just say the locals weren't, and that was my source of sustenance. So I had broken my vegetarian lifestyle. At any rate, in short order, I think maybe 10 days, it became very knowledgeable to me that this wasn't working. So I hitchhiked back to St. Louis. As I was hitchhiking through the Texas Panhandle, this car pulled over to pick me up, these three young men, who in the local vernacular we would say were rednecks. Nice guys, young guys. Are you going across the state? Sure, we're headed that way, hop in. It turns out these guys were stealing gas to get across their travels. So they pulled into one motel in the evening, after dark, and the driver turned to me and said, okay, it's your turn to siphon the gas. I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that. I'll just hop out here, thank you. And the one that was in charge said, no, he doesn't have to. We'll just pick him up. He's just a passenger. We'll do it. So they get out and they siphon the gas from the vehicles and, you know, get back on the road. And all of a sudden, these knuckleheads thought it was possible to outrun the Texas Rangers. So this is chased down the highway at high speed. They get pulled over. Everybody's out of the vehicle, including me. You know, all right, put your hand on, you know, the usual routine. And they say to the guy, no, he's not a part of us. We just picked him up a few miles back. And what do the police say? No, you're all in the same vehicle. You all get the same punishment. I spent 5 days in jail. So I had nothing to do with this. But somehow, because in my balance of karmic understanding, I had broken my vows as a vegetarian and eaten meat, I was not punished in this way. Whether Yamaraj actually charted it out like that or not, we don't know, but for the storyline, it works. So we see that Manduka Muni had no intent, purpose, no specific reason to cause this pain. It was just something he did quite inadvertently. But the punishment came. Same thing happened in my case. So I was able, when I read that, to immediately make this connection and understand how, yes, we're held accountable. We are responsible for what we do. Prabhupada, in his lectures on this particular verse, ties this very closely to the principle of abortion. Another topic which we will sidestep to go on to the rest of this verse. As an enforcer, Yamaraj has a thankless task. Nobody is real happy with, you know, Yamaraj's responsibility of holding together justice and executing, you know, punishment and, you know, making the laws. Kind of like the temple commander or the temple president, you know. They're not your favorite person. The pujari who's handing you maha, everybody likes them. You know, so, but, you know, what's that they say? No good deed goes unpunished. So everything that a person who's in this position does is criticized. It's analyzed for all of its faults, which, of course, we all know are many. If you're the temple president, there's so many things you're doing that's wrong. If you're the temple commander, there's so many instructions you've given that are wrong. So this is what happens when you take a position of authority. And Yamaraj is kind of, I guess we could say, wistful. Ah, if only I could go and preach. If only I could get out and share this knowledge of Krishna consciousness. You, off with your head. You, cut your legs off. You, buckets of fire. You, into the boiling oil. You know, what fun is that? I mean, you know, okay, for some people it's going to be fun, but, you know, I'm sure it grows old pretty quickly. He wants to preach. It's just like the Woodstock Festival, which, wistfully, hasn't happened in 2 years, but, you know, it's a nightmare, quite honest. You know, it's just really an insane situation. 700, 800, 900,000 kids, all just, you know, drinking like anything, completely crazy, you know, sleeping in the streets, under a tent, under a tree, whatever. But Krishna's Village of Peace is there. Amazing amounts of prasadam are distributed every year. 150,000 plates of prasadam in 4 days, you know. During that time, the preaching is so sweet. I get to do 5-6 hours a day in the question and answer booth. Just going, just going, just going. It's an austerity. Sleeping on the floor back at the school. You know, eating and whatever, sleeping 4 or 5 hours maybe. But the sweetness of that sharing Krishna consciousness is so enjoyable. This is what Yamaraj wants to taste. He wants to taste the pleasure of sharing Krishna consciousness. Not just, you know, okay, you sweep the floor, you take out the garbage, you off with your head. He wants to experience that. And Krishna, being the super soul in the heart of all living entities, even the demigods, fulfills that desire through this pastime of Manduka Muni. Now, but how did Vidura actually come to be? Well, we have grandfather Bhishma, who should by all rights be ruling the kingdom, but has taken this great vow, which we all know about. And then there's Vichitravirya. Vichitravirya is the young prince. He requires a princess so there could be progeny, so the dynasty can continue on. Salva has three really beautiful daughters, Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. And it's their Swayambhara. Vichitravirya is a little young, hasn't really been trained that well in all the arts and skills of battle. And so Bhishma goes and captures these girls for Vichitravirya. He actually fights with Salva. And Salva is such an expert warrior, he wounds Bhishma in the chest. And everybody's amazed. Wow, you're good. Somehow the battle continues, but Bhishma is victorious, puts the three girls on the chariot, takes them back. Amba, Ambalika, and Ambika. They all three are brought back and presented to Vichitravirya. We know that Amba has already got her heart set on one of the princes. That's a whole nother story. Let's just cap that personality by saying, hell has no fury like a woman scorned, and leave that for another pastime. So, we have these two personalities that are married to Vichitravirya, Ambika and Ambalika. Unfortunately, before they can conceive any children, Vichitravirya dies. What's to be done? There has to be some male progeny so the line can continue. So, Satyavati, the mother of Vichitravirya, she arranges for her other son from a previous time, Vyasadeva, to come and impregnate the girls. In previous times, this was all right to do. It's one of the things that's said in Kali Yuga. No, 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 you don't get to do that in Kali Yuga. You guys are just a bunch of animals. So in Kali Yuga, that's not done. But at this time, this was allowed. Now, Vyasadeva is a great sage, living in the Himalayan mountains. He doesn't have a nice court with a fancy embroidered collar and silk dhoti and nice groomed physical appearance. He's got long matted hair. He bathes just by dunking in the river. There's no, big process, you know. His nails are probably long. We see this with the yogis, you know. So he comes and the girls are presented to him one by one. So the first one, Ambalika, she comes in and she just turns pale with fright at the sight of this Muni that she's supposed to conceive a child from. So, as they say, the deed is accomplished. But Vyasadeva reports back to his mother, she was extremely frightened and turned pale, so the son will be born very pale and anemic. And we know this is Pandu. No, that's Ambika, I'm sorry. Ambika is Pandu. And, you know, he's not going to be a very healthy individual. All right, well, there's another daughter. There's another daughter. Here. This is Ambalika. Ambalika comes in, takes one look at Vyasadeva and closes her eyes in fear. Oh my God, I have to go to bed with him? So, somehow, the activity is successful. Vyasadeva reports back to his mother. She closed her eyes out of fear. The child's going to be born blind. Satyavati is just completely beside herself, you know, an anemic kid and a blind kid. Who's going to rule the kingdom? Just once more, please. Once more. All right, so Ambalika is deputed. Okay, you don't close your eyes this time. You're going to do it again, but don't close your eyes. She says to herself, she says, no, ain't no way I'm going back in there with him. Calls her maidservant, who's a sudra, you know, maidservant. Here, I got a job for you. You'll do anything for me, right? You're my servant? Yeah. Oh, great, here. So she sends the maidservant in. The maidservant by nature is very humble, very accommodating, very submissive, and very delightfully receives Vyasadeva and conceives a wonderful child, Vidura. Unfortunately, she's a sudra. So he is outside of the realm of being able to, Vyas reports to, so everything the next morning. She thinks she fooled me, but, you know, I'm no dope. She sent the maidservant in, so here's what you get. You get a wonderful son, but he's a sudra's son. So, you know, Sudrani's son, really. So, and he says, and by the way, Mom, once, twice, thrice, no more. Don't call me again. I'm going back to the forest and shaking this one off, bathing the Ganga a couple of times. So in this way, we have the birth scene of Vidura set up and structured like this. Vidura comes onto the scene from the beginning, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport. He's not, how does Prabhupada word it? Excuse me. Forbidden to even be a party of the royal heritage of his brothers. It must have been really hard. I mean, he's a transcendental personality. But, you know, there's your brothers, all born in the same scenario. They're getting all of the different treatment, and you're just kind of left outside the palace, you know? Of course, this proved to be exactly what the incarnation of Yamaraj as Vidura desired, because it gave him full facility for preaching. Because he was self-realized. This is, of course, through the association with Rishi Maitreya, whom he left the palace for some time and was trained by in the transcendental sciences, Prabhupada puts it. So in this way, he became an elevated spiritual master. Now, this is a very important point that Prabhupada brings into play in this purport, and I want to read this part of it again. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, anyone who is conversant in the transcendental knowledge or the science of Godhead, be he a brahmana, a sudra, a householder, or a sannyasi, is eligible to become a spiritual master. Even in the moral codes maintained by Chanaka Pandit, there is no harm in taking lessons from a person who may be by birth less than a sudra. This is one part of the answer. A devotee is neither a sudra nor a brahmana. A devotee is transcendental to such divisions of mundane society. A Brahmin, a Sudra, a householder, or a sannyasi. Naham Vipronachana Rapatanapi Vaishna Sudram. Naham Varna. We all know that verse. Doesn't matter what position you have. What's that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says? Grihe Thakur Bani Thakur Sadahari Bolo Thakur. Any circumstance you're in, if you are conversant in the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, you're qualified to be a spiritual master. And by the way, it doesn't say if you're a man conversant in the science of Krishna consciousness. It says if you're a devotee. Doesn't matter what your external physical circumstance or body is. If you are conversant in Krishna consciousness, you are qualified to be a spiritual master. This is what Prabhupada expected of us. This is why Prabhupada trained us. This is why Prabhupada would sometimes be sitting right there on the Vyasasana and turn to a devotee and say, now you give the class. You can imagine sitting next to Prabhupada and he turns to you, now you give the class. But this is why he did these things, to train us. This is why he encouraged that one must read his books regularly. This is why every single word Prabhupada spoke was recorded. So that we can have this information. How wonderful it is when you're given a verse to speak on the Bhagavatam, you can go to prabhupadvani.org and pull up the lecture Prabhupada gave on that verse. And here, what did Prabhupada say about this? What was his realization that he shared with us that I can try and understand? Because it doesn't matter where the information comes from. If you can embrace it and become Krishna conscious by it. Prabhupada quotes Chanakya Pandit here. You take gold from a dirty place. Sometimes we've had the experience as parents. Your child will eat something, maybe a ring, maybe a coin, and you have to look through their diapers to see when it's come out. A, to make sure it's come out so healthy, and B, because you got to get it on clean, you know. So, you know, it's got to be done. But you're taking that from that dirty place. So, similarly, this is the glory of the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as carried on by Narottam Das Thakur, as carried on by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and as carried on by Srila Prabhupada, that your actions do not qualify, are not restricted to the birth that you've taken, if you qualify yourself through devotional knowledge. Then you can be a speaker of the Bhagavad. Then you can be a teacher. You can become a spiritual master. Otherwise, how was it some common Midwestern boy from a Malecha background in St. Louis is sitting here speaking the Bhagavatam message? Because you've gotten the mercy and the blessings of Srila Prabhupada. That's the only explanation. Same way that Vidura got the mercy and the blessings of Rishi Maitreya. Because of that, he was able to give this spiritual knowledge. And in the process of giving that spiritual knowledge, he was able to go back and deliver his brothers. The gatekeepers may have said, oh, I'm sorry, you're the Sudra brother. You can't come in. No, I'm the brother. I have important messages. And he delivered those important messages to Dhritarashtra. By this time, of course, we know Pandu had passed away. That's a whole other story with its own intricacies. Dhritarashtra was left. He was blind. Prabhupada says not only physically blind, but spiritually blind. He could not see the wrongdoings of his own sons. He could not see the mistakes and how he treated the Pandavas. He could not see after the battle how he was living like a kept dog, as the phrase is used, in the house of those who had conquered him. So Vidura came in, hey, wake up. We call that in the Boston vernacular, dope slap. You know, wake up. What are you? You can't do like that. No, this isn't for your benefit. And Vidura spoke very strongly the message of the Bhagavatam and aroused in him that ability to become renounced from all these mundane attachments that he had so comfortably been living. What was it Vidura said? Like a kept dog eating the scraps off the plate of your enemies. Family, but still. So in this way, Vidura fulfilled his long, Yamaraj fulfilled his long-held desire to preach Krishna consciousness. Even though in a very difficult birth situation. We find a similar example in the observance today of Vrindavan Das Thakur. Awkward position in his childhood. He was born into a wonderful family. Part of the whole Navadvip area, Mamagachi. Mamagachi is a wonderful place. There's so many nice devotees in that area. And in Mamagachi, there's a Kumara hut. There's a small area there. And this is where his father was Vaikuntha Nath Vipra. And his mother was Narayani. And Narayani, interestingly enough, has a nice family connection. She's the daughter of Shivas Pandit's elder brother, Nalini Pandit. It's interesting when we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, the different Gaura Leelas, and Gaura Gonadesha Topeka particularly, and we see how interconnected all these different devotees are. How, you know, so many come from Ambika Kalna, the very wonderful collection of devotees there. Things like this. Now, Akavi Karnapur, he mentions in the Gaura Gonadesha Deepika, he mentions that this sister of Nalini was one of Krishna's wet nurses. And in Mahaprabhu's pastime, she became Narayani. Now, She had a sister also who was connected in Krishna's pastime in that same service category. So together they came to be, we find this a lot, you know, two personalities that are family or that are very close and Krishna Lila, they come together, hey, let's go to Gaur Lila. I heard there's some kirtan happening on the Ganga, let's go take part, you know. There's a very wonderful story with Abhiram Das Thakur, how that happened. That's another class. At any rate, Narayani, she received great mercy because Mahaprabhu would give her his remnants regularly. When he'd be at the house of Shrivas, particularly for the kirtans, the Veda kirtans in the evenings, he would give Narayani Mahaprasadam directly from his own hand. You know, she was only a small child, 4 years old. We see that sometimes when you associate with different spiritual masters, they'll call a little kid over, you know. One of the greatest pleasures is Indradyumna Swami's Vyas Puja celebrated in Ukraine, in Dnipropetrovsk. There's a huge feast there, range, and he intentionally lines all the kids up in two rows in front. And myself and him and Badahari, we take the service of passing out, okay, glubshamans and, you know, sweets and samosas, and all the kids come, they just, oh. So it's a very nice thing for them. So it has tradition. Mahaprabhu did this with Narayani, you know. And even though she was only 4 years old, she became completely intoxicated with the love of God because of this. Chaitanya Bhagavat makes note of it. It says that the golden moon of Gauranga revealed himself to all souls. And at that time, having given his prasad to Narayani, he ordered her, now, chant the name of Sri Krishna. And in doing so, she swooned the names, oh Krishna, Hare Krishna, and fainted in ecstasy. Tears filled her eyes. 4 years old. It's pretty amazing. There's, I'm gonna squeeze in a grandpa moment here. There's a great little video of my granddaughter watering Tulsi Devi. My daughter and her husband have really, really nice Tulsi, and Revati loves to water them, and she's got the hose on there. Hare Ramo! Hare Ramo! Ramo, Ramo! Watering like that, and just in the greatest pleasure. So this is, for little children like this, is a great source of pleasure to see what their parents are doing and follow. So Narayani got this kind of mercy. So as a result of this, she became greatly blessed. And Vrindavan Das Thakur appeared in her womb. Now, as was the custom, she was quite young, 14, 15 years old. And Vrindavan Das Thakur made his appearance there. And it says Lord Gauranga and Lord Nityananda were the very life and soul of the child Vrindavan Das. He spent his childhood with his mother and stayed mostly in the home in the residential area of his maternal grandparents. And his father died when he was quite young. This is kind of a common theme we see through the lives of many of our acharyas, that one or both parents depart at a young time and a sibling or an extended family member ends up raising. So the mother moved into the house of Srivas and became a maid servant there. I'm sorry. She moved into the house of Srivas, but became a maidservant at the house of Vasudev Dutt. And Vasudev Dutt took the sole responsibility of maintaining Narayani and the young child Vrindavan. And he engaged her in different responsibilities and duties around the house, including being a pujari to his deities. Imagine that. Well, what do you do? Oh, I'm a pujari for Vasudev Dutt. So during this time, of course, Vrindavan Das grew, you know, very nicely and had access to so many different types of studies, and he associated with so many different wonderful devotees, and, you know, just an amazing childhood growing up and amazing association. Bhaktisiddhanta mentions in his commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat that in this ancestral home, he grew up, was nourished and cared for like a valuable gem. I was given one piece of antiquity that I have in my home, and my wife's always concerned that I take really good care of it. I'm real careful with it, you know. You know, so this is how Vrindavan Das was raised. You know, he said, oh, we have to very valuable. He was only 4 years old when Mahaprabhu took sannyas. So his early childhood had that imprint, or as we say, samskara, of Mahaprabhu's Navadvipa Lila. But he took sannyas 4 years old, and he was only around his early 20s when Mahaprabhu departed from this world. So he didn't get a lot of that intimate one-on-one association. But because Mahaprabhu had instructed Nityananda, you stay in Bengal, because if we both stay here in Puri, then who's going to preach in Bengal? So Nityananda gave his association to Vrindavan Das. Matter of fact, Vrindavan Das was the last disciple of Nityananda. And some devotees aren't aware, Vrindavan Das not only wrote the Chaitanya Bhagavat, but he wrote the Nityananda Charitamrita, which is a wonderful book. If you're a follower or a devotee of Nityananda, you must read this book. It's just got so much nectar in there. Regarding his writing the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Kavi Karnapur notes that Vrindavan Das Thakur is to be understood as an incarnation of Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Vyasadeva wrote the Vedas as appeared in Mahaprabhu's time to write the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And he originally was known as Chaitanya Mangala. We all know the story. Lokchan Das Thakur wrote a book, and it was Chaitanya Mangala. So we got these two books. What are we going to do here? So Vrindavan Das changed his book to Chaitanya Bhagavat. So in this way, the three prominent books, Chaitanya Mangala, Chaitanya Bhagavat, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, are three main resources for the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. It's an interesting thing amongst all of the Gaudiya authors of Mahaprabhu's time, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana, and Krishnadas Kaviraj, including Vrindavan Das Thakur, that they always keep themselves in the background. They never prominently put themselves into the storyline. They don't mention much about their personal history or their family lineage. And most of the authors, you know, don't even mention their own name directly. Rupa Goswami does this in his Padyavali, you know, anonymous or unknown author. Many of the books written simply are signed, Thus Speaks Krishnadas. Well, which Krishnadas? So, in a lot of cases, the humility of the author left the particular work not clearly known. Krishnadas Kaviraj gave great homage for this reason to Vrindavan Das Thakur. He notes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya Lila, Vrindavan Das Thakur is Lord Nityananda's favorite disciple. And therefore, we understand him to be the original Vyas in describing the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Vyasadeva told Krishna's pastimes in the Bhagavatam, Vrindavan Das Thakur has described Chaitanya Lila in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Krishnadas Kaviraj was not arrogant in his writing. He was very appreciative of the other Vaishnava authors. And so he gives more praises here. He says, hearing Chaitanya Bhagavat destroys all one's misfortune. By reading the Chaitanya Bhagavat, one will understand the glories of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and he will attain the highest perfection, pure love for Krishna. Such a wonderful book could not be written by a regular human being. It seems that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself has spoken it through the mouth of Vrindavan Das Thakur. I therefore offer millions of respectful obeisances at the lotus feet of Vrindavan Das Thakur. By compiling such a valuable book, he's delivered everyone from the cycle of birth and death. Very important statement Krishnadas Kaviraj makes. By compiling such a valuable book means we read it, he has delivered everyone from the cycle of birth and death. So in this way, very, very important work, and very much appreciated by the other Vaishnava authors. Now, Vrindavan Das was so completely absorbed in the pastimes of Nityananda, as it was his guru, and he had a close, intimate association, he didn't elaborately describe all of Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Many of them were simply abbreviated, and this is why they are expanded on by Krishna's Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in this way, we have complementary works, as you would say. But, in my humble opinion, one of the most important lessons of Vrindavan Das Thakur is his instruction to avoid Vaishnava aparad. He, primarily the activities of Mahaprabhu in his student life, in his childhood, his chastisement of the Kazi, and his departure from Navadvip, and a bit of the early Puri pastimes, these are primarily what is described by him. But he departs from the descriptions there and gives this specific instruction. Eti parihara oje papi nandikari tabe lati marantar shrihara upari. Even after being told how objectionable it is, if someone still blasphemes a Vaishnava, then I will kick them in the head. Now, we all want the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas on our head, but not in the form of a kick. We should be desirous to take that dust and put it on their head, because the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, having traversed all the holy places and having come from the saffron particles of the dust of the Lord's own lotus feet, is very valuable. But if we get kicked in the head, that's not the best way to do that. Now, these same words are repeated throughout the Adya, Madhya, and Antilulas of the Chaitanya Bhagavad. He very strongly says this. Another place he says, such a person should be beaten about the head. Such a person should be thrown into the Ganga. You know, he's not very tolerant or accommodating for Vaishnava aparad. Some foolish and ignorant persons, they take these statements and they criticize Vrindavan Das Thakur for having made these statements. Just see the duplicity of this. Vrindavan Das Thakur's warning is, don't criticize a Vaishnava. Oh, listen to how harsh he speaks about criticizing Vaishnava. He's not right. So, Bhaktisiddhanta mentions that such criticism leads such individuals into the mud of offensiveness. Mentioning Woodstock, it's very, very hot. It's the summer. It's horrible heat. So they've created in the heart of Woodstock this huge fountain and mud all around it. And the fountain is pouring water all the time, and there's this mud puddle. It's basically a big mud puddle. And so many of the kids love to go and wallow and play in this mud puddle. I mean, in reality, it's a little cooling. Yeah, it's impressively hot. We see this in Vrindavan. The pigs like to lay in these open sewers. The reason is because that water is very cool. But it's sewer water. In the same way, these kids are being relieved of the heat, but now they're covered in mud. So this is not seen to be a very desirable thing, to be covered in mud. But the mud of offensiveness to a Vaishnava, this is very, very bad. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati adds to this, to these people who think like this about Vrindavan Das Thakur, I am ready to kick on their heads. So all the way around, we see that the activity of offending a Vaishnava is something very strongly rejected by all of our acharyas. Vrindavan Das says that if even a single fleck of dust should fall from the foot of a saintly person onto the head of such a sinful blasphemer, then that person will be blessed and his sinful conditioning will be eradicated. So, the knowledge of Nityananda and Gauranga's pastimes and the appreciation of this is embraced by everyone. But some persons, they're critical. So, to those persons who are fortunate enough to be kicked on the head by Vrindavan Das Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, we see that even that less than favorable way of getting the dust still brings the dust and can advance them. So in this way, there is hope for a blasphemer. But better we just don't blaspheme. Better we just don't blaspheme. This is the business of our loose tongue, to criticize, to fault find. Of course, as a Vaishnava, we should lead our life in such a way that people won't, when they hear our name, go, oh, him. Remember when he did such and such? Isn't he the one that did? You know, we don't want that to be attached to our name. Oh, yes, he assisted with serving Prabhupada in this way and that way and, you know, so on and so on. So we want to lead our life in such a way that there is no criticism to be offered, but someone will always find a way, so we want to avoid falling into that camp. So to close, I'd like to read this song written by Vrindavan Das Thakur about the glories of Lord Nityananda. Nitai is within and without. He is everywhere within this world. He is the lover and he is the sweetheart. Everyone says it. Nitai is my regulative principles, my object of worship, the light of my eyes. Nitai is in all 10 directions. In fact, he fills all 3 worlds. Nitai, as Ananga Manjari, eternally serves the sweet Srimati Radhika. He is not different from Baladev, whose beautiful face resembles millions of moons and is surrounded by Shakas and Shakis. The sister of Radharani, Ananga Manjari, is very dear to Sri Sham, and she is the life and soul of the Shakis. She decorates the arena of the temple named Mani Mandira. Nitai sustains the Yogapith and becomes the throne for the Lord to rest on. Nitai is also the dress and the ornaments. He enjoys these pastimes. What more can I say? Nitai is the eyes, the mouth, and the limbs of everyone. Nitai, 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 Nitai. I only see Nitai dancing. Raising my hands and chanting Nitai, I will go to Braj. I, Vrindavan Das, only request that Nitai kindly never leave me. So we can request the same thing, that Lord Nityananda will always bless us with his association in our hearts, in our minds, and on our tongues. So we'll finish there, a little bit late, but that's what I knew would happen. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Oh, yes, Maramati.
Thank you for 2 classes. Really nice. We know that in the CCI, at least I've heard how Krishnadas Kaviraj wrote his book Hearing from Raghunath Das Goswami and Murari Gupta's notes. I was just wondering that, do you know how did Vrindavan Das Thakur write the Chaitanya Bhagavat?
Put me on the spot, nice. As I remember, because his mother was party to many of these pastimes, mm-hmm. and because his immediate family members, Shrivas, Nalini, these were all part of these pastimes. He heard them directly from them.
Thank you.
Our revered guest.
I'm just wondering, maybe I missed where you heard that detail of the spear. Was it a lance? I mean, I heard about
lecture.
Really about the details.
1976, Vrindavan on the 5th canto, the Hellish Planets chapter.
Oh my gosh! Okay.
Matter of fact, there's 3 lectures in a row on that section of the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada speaks about that, and he's very specific in the details. Yeah, I was a little. My wife was like, "What?" And I said, "Yeah, it's right here. Look." And I. It's right here too. Prabhupada's very clear on it. And then the 3rd one, he elaborates how in the Muslim Arabian countries, this is sometimes still done. Yeah. He uses the word shula, Vaikuntha, and one other word for describing this type of punishment. Yeah. Oh, the lance up the one side and out the other. Yeah. All right. Pran.
If the memory is given to Mandabha Rishi or us of our past deeds that we are going to suffer now, maybe the regression would take place, repentance would take place, maybe it would nullify better instead of like really experiencing this and then coming out.
You know, this is all the intricacies of how Yamaraj rules. This is also one of the benefits and glories of taking to devotional service. All of these past sins are eradicated. This is why we go out and preach. This is why Vidura manifested. Yamaraj wanted to share this. I got so many people lined up here. It's like when I'm doing the sitar during some of the festivals, I look out and the line goes all the way around the building. Oh, we're going to be here for a while. So Yamaraj has seen this huge line of sinful people. If they just took to devotional service, I wouldn't have all these people here. So he's eager to share Krishna consciousness because it can do exactly what you're saying, alleviate them having to come to him and be punished. But as Prabhupada says, I just heard Prabhupada say this on a class in LA, he said that the non-devotee population is so much more. He said, our devotee population, you can count on one, two hands. He says like that, one, two, and his hands go, one, two hands. But the non-devotee population, there are so many, he says. So, you know, this is our opportunity to share Krishna consciousness and try and alleviate all those people getting to Yamaraj. So I have to wrap it up. It's after time, and I have an appointment. I have to keep.
Are you saying that they all should become devotee, otherwise doomed?
Say what?
Are you saying they all should become devotee right away, otherwise they will be doomed?
Yeah, pretty much. It's not me saying it. The Bhagavatam says it. Chaitanya Charitamrita says it. Everybody says it. If we don't become devotees, if we don't embrace devotional service, janma karma chamedya vyam, evayam vritakvataha, you know, birth after birth after birth, abrahma bhuvana loka, all the way up and all the way down. So many different bodies. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna, glories to Vrindavan Das Thakur. Nitai Param.